Well, we were watching, frankly, I'll be honest, this is my first weekend where I wasn't doing some sort of play-by-play in 6 months. And so I spent a lot of time with the family, got to take a lot of bike rides with the boys, and the boys being Franklin and Sherman, our dogs, and Jen, my wife. We went to three different locations to ride bikes this weekend, including Brooksville yesterday, including the whole Bexley area around our neighborhood, Dunedin on Saturday. It was a fun-filled weekend, so I didn't watch a ton, but I was following along. I would advise you watch back, especially what happened with softball. We'll get to them in our second segment. They are the eighth seed for the AAC tournament, and we told you that if they were not to finish seventh, the eighth seed would put them on the same half of the bracket as Wichita State. That turned out to be the case, but they'll start off against Tulsa because Wichita climbed over Tulsa. We'll do the whole rundown of softball and their crazy games against UTSA, including back-to-back extra inning games where the Bulls forced the extra innings with an amazing home run, and then splitting those games, which dropped them from contention for the seventh seed, but then getting it all back and then some in a big-time offensive showing on Sunday, 14-4. But in our first segment, yeah, we said that the Bulls at East Carolina were just hoping to win one game. And we didn't know that during the first game, which is already the one that, frankly, you were going to have the most problems with because of the opposing pitcher, Treya Savage. And that turned out to happen exactly as prescribed if you're East Carolina, to the tune of a run rule defeat. And they, frankly, were not complaining about the run rule happening because it got them out of there. They were sick. It started to happen, and around the third inning, and it meaning food poisoning spreading through the dugout. And I don't need to go into any more details other than to tell you it was probably good that that game got over in an expedient fashion. Funny, the first game of the series went seven innings the way you don't want it to. The last game of the series was prescribed seven innings, and we'll get more into that incredible finale on Sunday night. And they could not have gone any more differently if you're the Bulls. The first game only lasted an hour and 51 minutes. You could not expect to give up many runs and beat Treya Savage, who is now 10-1 on the season with a 1.69 ERA, and the Bulls gave up a two spot right away. It was not a good day for Hunter Mink, and obviously with his sickness spreading through the dugout, not a good day in general. He gave up seven runs in two and a third innings. Actually, only threw 46 pitches, could have been an option for Sunday. But as for Savage, went the distance. 94 pitches for his seven innings, 11 strikeouts, no walks. He now has 124 strikeouts in 74 and two-thirds innings, 124 strikeouts to just 21 walks, and he's just unbeatable, it seems like, these days. Three-run double by Jacob Jenkins-Cowart really broke it open in the bottom of the second. That was 5-0, at a homer in the third. Actually, the run rule was not a sure thing. It's a 10-run margin, and it was 8-1 going into the bottom of the seventh inning. And again, you never want to admit this, but frankly, you don't mind that East Carolina hit a two-run homer off the bat of Dixon Williams to set up the run rule. And it didn't take them much to get that extra run. In fact, they didn't get recorded out. A walk, a double, and then a walk-off, if you will, single, 11-1. So with what was going on, not the weather, it was what was going on in the Bulls' dugout. There was no game on Saturday. It all got pushed to Sunday for a doubleheader. And again, you're hoping just to win one of these two games. Saturday was a recovery day, and the Bulls were ready to go on Sunday. Because of the situation, the second game was seven innings prescribed, and it actually worked to the Bulls' benefit just from a pitching perspective. They were able to hold Jack Siebert out of the first game of Sunday's doubleheader and have their closer Chandler Dorsey ready to go. And that was the combo that got them the win, along with some clutch hitting and some big time drama. But the Bulls made a threat to win the middle game. They were actually up 5-3. I'll give East Carolina credit for this. You know, they don't often let your hope linger. The Bulls, by the time they had a 5-3 lead after the top of the fifth inning, it was tied right back up in the middle of the fifth on Sunday. And then the Bulls ended up not scoring another run, losing the game by the count of 8-5. The wind was blowing out, and it was gusting out to right field, and Bobby Boeser took full advantage with a three-run homer in the top of the second to complete a two-out rally. It was an Eric Snow bunt single, what the heck, right? Then Matt Buffington was hit by a pitch, and that was the spark that the Bulls needed. as after giving up a run in the bottom of the first right away, the Bulls had the lead. Joey Vellini pitched the first four innings for South Florida, kept East Carolina off the board until a home run by Jacob Starling in the bottom of the third made it 3-2. And then quickly, East Carolina, after a 1-2-3 top of the fourth, would tie things up. A two-out single. They're a pretty good two-out hitting team, East Carolina. However, the Bulls would retake the lead. I mentioned it, 5-3, as they got those two runs in the top of the fifth. Again, Buffington was hit by a pitch. Bobby Boeser walked in a full count. And this was Danny Beal, by the way. This was his start. And then a sack bunt by Ben Rosenblum. A wild pitch where the Bulls scored on the run. Unfortunately, Bobby Boeser was picked off at third base, or Rafael Betancourt would have made it 6-3 with his home run. Instead, it was a 5-3 count. So that's how Danny Beal's day started for East Carolina. And he ended up giving them the last five innings of work and the win, and did obviously not give up another run. I mentioned East Carolina doesn't exactly let you hang around for that long if they can do anything about it. And unfortunately, after Joey Vellini gave the Bulls four solid innings like he did in his previous start last week, Don Madonna, four-pitch walk, and a two-run homer. And that was it for Madonna. Bryce Archie came in. He would actually take the loss as East Carolina grabbed a run in the bottom of the sixth. The sixth inning was quite pivotal as Jacob Jenkins Cowart there, rather tall right fielder, took a home run away from Stuart Puckett. And then, of course, they get the run on a, two-out hit by Jenkins Cowart in the bottom of the sixth. And it just had that East Carolina win vibe to it. Two solo homers off Archie in the bottom of the seventh. And again, Beal closed out the Bulls with hardly any threats the rest of the way. Matter of fact, the Bulls only stranded four runners in this game. East Carolina, 13 hits. Again, this team entered the weekend and will exit the weekend with the best batting average in the AAC. It's now 3.18, and the best ERA in the AAC. It's 3.55. So scoring five runs against them and getting home runs from Boeser and Betancourt at the top of the lineup. A little bit of momentum pushing to the final game. And again, you knew it was going to go seven. So if you could jump ahead and maybe bring your closer in to finish the deal, you could, and I hate this phrase, you hear a lot in the playoffs, steal a game. I understand, and you know me, I hate cliches, what the phrase means. It means you go on the road and you grab a game and then you take the home field advantage, or home court advantage, really, from the team that is by seed the better team. And so you've stolen a game. Well, no, you've won the game. I mean, like basketball analogy, if you're down getting outplayed by 20 with 7 minutes to go and you come back and win, you've stolen a game. But to win a game, you've won a game. The reason it kind of applies here is, again, you don't expect to win a game in Greenville. You hope to. This game was only going to go seven innings, so there was a chance to pull it off if you took an early lead. You take a team that generally, if given a bunch of chances to come back and win a game, is going to take advantage of at least one, if not more, of those chances, and you limit their chances. And thirdly, East Carolina has been without three key arms in their pen, so there was a chance from a pitching perspective to grab that lead and, quote-unquote, perhaps steal a victory. Well, it was a very well-earned victory. It came down to some wild stuff at the end, and the Bulls win it. And what does that mean for their outlook? A lot. Bulls got a two-out RBI hit from John Montez in the top of the first, but East Carolina grabbed two immediately against Jack Siebert. And after the Bulls went scoreless in the top of the second, it was a 3-1 game. But Montez comes through again with a tying hit in the top of the third after Ben Rosenblum led it off with a homer, and we were 3-3. And that next run, again in a seven-inning game, was going to be big. In the bottom of the fourth, East Carolina got the go-ahead run over to third base, but Joey Barini lined out. This was against Siebert, who settled things down and got a lead handed to him in the top of the fifth inning. Rosenblum walks. An error by the second baseman puts runners on the corners. That was huge, and Joaquin Moncay came through with an RBI single, but the Bulls hit into a double play, so, you know, you're hoping for a big lead, you're just not going to get it against East Carolina. But Jack Siebert, two strikeouts and a flyout to Jenkins Cowart, facing the top of the order, getting them 1-2-3 in the, in effect, bottom of the seventh, in this case, bottom of the fifth, that was enormous. Riley Johnson, who's been in the middle of everything for them, a 360 hitter, and Carter Cunningham, who's above 400, And Jenkins Coward is their guy, you know, with 55 RBI. To get them down in order, that was a huge inning. And it's why Siebert came out to pitch the sixth inning. He was handed a two-run lead, and this was Drew Brutcher singling through the right side. By the way, after Stuart Puckett had got picked off, but Eric Snow, a two-out walk, helped lead to Brutcher's hit that made it 5-3, which came in handy because against Siebert, Jacob Starling homered to start off the bottom of the sixth inning. And then a runner at second base with one out, East Carolina probably assuming it was going to tie the score. Didn't happen. Justin Wilcoxon pops out, and then a big three-pitch strikeout by Siebert. We head to the top of the seventh, which again in this game is the ninth inning, and the Bulls look like they were going to be able to put it away. A leadoff double by Betancourt. They would load the bases with nobody out. And then in comes Jaden Winter. Again, they don't have some of their key arms, including Wyatt Lunsford-Shankman, who leads the country in ERA with a 1 ERA, and by the way, in 45 innings, has struck out 77. He was not available. So the Bulls, you know, this is it. They're going to score some more runs. Nope. Jaden Winter, whose strikeout-to-walk ratio is 17-13, gets two strikeouts, including Eric Snow, and that place is fired up. I mean, jacked up. And we go to the, in effect, bottom of the ninth, and it's still 5-4. And here comes the Bulls closer, Chandler Dorsey, and issues a five-pitch walk. Then, after falling behind the great Riley Johnson, oh, this was everything. This was definitely the controversial part I was talking about. Johnson's out there to bunt or take a walk. So it's 2-0. He's still trying to bunt, and he thought it was 3-0. Oh, it was close. But two things. Chandler Dorsey got the call, so instead of 3-0, it's 2-1. And Johnson not only disagreed, but the crowd there, which, just a note on the East Carolina Pirates crowd, great fan support. They've had sellouts. They are one of the best college baseball towns in the country. But, and I can speak from experience being a Kentucky basketball family, the fans think every call should go their way. Well, you multiply that by about 20 on this call that went in the Bulls' favor. Because not just 2-1 instead of 3-0, but Johnson was upset, stepped out of the box, kept shaking his head, was saying things to the umpire. And oh, by the way, there's a 20-second pitch clock, which if you don't fire off the pitch in time, it counts as a ball for the other team. Also, the batter has to get back in the box before 8 seconds on the clock, and he didn't. So it went to 2-2. Umpires had the, you know, guts to make that call, and all of a sudden, the bunt's off. And then Johnson strikes out on a dynamite breaking ball by Dorsey. So the Bulls were in better shape then, certainly haven't iced things away. And then when a pinch runner steals second and Carter Cunningham walks, it's first and second, and the winning run's on base. And oh, by the way, on the walk, Matt Buffington, the Bulls catcher, who had some, let's just say, colorful exchanges with the East Carolina fans, said something to the umpire that got him tossed. Bobby Bozer, who was a late scratch, comes in to play third base. Here comes Joaquin Moncada to catch. And here comes Jacob Jenkins Cowart, their RBI leader. And he loves hitting fastballs. And Dorsey offered one up on 0-1. And Jenkins Cowart hit it sharply to shortstop. Eric Snow to Montez, over to Puckett. Game-ending double play. And the Bulls win 5-4. Yes. They are below 500. Yes, they are well below 500 in conference, but they are in much better shape than they would have been.
Had they lost, they'd be in last place alongside of Memphis in those bottom two spots. The bottom two teams do not make it to the conference tournament. Instead, the Bulls are in a three-way tie, a game above Memphis, 9-12 alongside of UAB and Rice. Two of those teams are going to make it to Clearwater, and UAB is the team that comes to Tampa in two weekends to finish up the regular season. So the Bulls maintain control is what I'm saying. And the other team in the tie, Rice, yeah, swept the Bulls. But guess who Rice ends up the regular season against? At East Carolina. If the Bulls can win the series this weekend against UTSA, I'm not going to say they've locked up a spot in the conference tournament, but they've gone a long way towards it. And again, you point back to that true gut check of a victory on Sunday night as how they were able to do it. By the way, John Montez with those two RBI for the Bulls. Monkey, Rosenblum, Betancourt, and Montez all with two hits as the Bulls out-hit the Pirates last night 11-6. Jack Siebert deserves special mention for getting the win, his fifth on the season. After coughing up three runs in the first two innings, only allowed that solo homer in the sixth. Big stuff there. And Chandler Dorsey, even though it was eventful, got save number 7. Drama of a different sort awaits the Bulls in Gainesville, I'm guessing anyway, because that's where they play on Tuesday night. The Bulls are back to within a game of 500. The Gators are one on the other side of 500 at 24-23, 10-14 in the very difficult SEC after getting run-ruled in the series decider at home to Tennessee 16-3 Sunday. After this game on Tuesday night, the Gators have two more conference series left, remembering that in order to get an at-large to the NCAA tournament, you have to be 500. And frankly, you don't want to be too close to 500 because you might not get selected. But they are going to be going all out against the Bulls. Should be pretty interesting. Oh man, was softball series this weekend interesting in San Antonio. They take 2 of 3 and they stay in the 8th spot, which they enter the weekend. That's where they'll be for the conference tournament starting on Wednesday. To get there, let's just say they're fully prepared for any drama that might unfold in Wichita for the AAC tournament, because you had drama of every shape this weekend. Bulls had 2 late big home runs to force extra innings, mixed results including getting walked off in a 3-run homer in the middle. But on Friday, a 4-hour game nearly with, if you include the rain delay, yeah, definitely a 4-hour game with a thrilling victory. And then Sunday, the highest scoring game of the season for the Bulls. We told you that Jamie Gilbert was an outstanding pitcher for UTSA. Once you get past her, the numbers drop off. Well, it took them a while to get past her because they kept getting on base to the tune of 19 left on base. And this was in the win, 11 innings on Friday night. They left the bases loaded a couple of times, but, you know, sometimes leaving the bases loaded, you know, you got first and second, 2 outs, you get a 2-out walk, and you really only have the 1 shot. Well, in this case for the Bulls, specifically, 3 times in the 1st, 2nd, and 4th inning, they had 2nd and 3rd and 1 out and couldn't score. One time, Alana Rivera in the 2nd with 2 outs hit a line shot up the middle, looked for sure like a 2-0 situation, gets caught, and it caught up to the Bulls as their by far best hitter, Jalen Pritchard, has an RBI single to make it 1-0. Pritchard hitting .336, 2nd best on the team, is nearly a 100-point drop-off in batting average. So she gave them the lead, and the Bulls were getting shut out 1-0 going to the 7th when Marissa Trivelpiece smacks her 2nd home run of the year, absolutely clutch. Remember, she had 8 homers last year. What a time for this one. And Belle Sarja was masterful. Coming in to relieve Dixon after UTSA had scored, all Sarja did was go 6 1/3 innings and strike out a season-high 9. The Bulls actually just got 1 runner on in each of the next 3 innings, finally breaking through with a 2-out, bases-loaded walk after they, speaking of finally, got Gilbert out of the game as she threw her 177th pitch. It was a double and a big one to the wall by, yep, Trivelpiece. Kathy Garcia-Soto, a 4-pitch walk, and then an uneventful bottom of the 11th for a very eventful victory for the Bulls. But gotta say it, they've been playing better lately, and the Roadrunners got their victory, very eventful, on Saturday. 8-5 on a walk-off 3-run homer in the bottom of the 8th by their RBI leader, Taylor Jensen. But a lot happened before that. Now, in this game, the Bulls only had 4 hits, and they only stranded 5, not 19. But after they jumped ahead early, Olivia Elliott tripled in the 1st, came home on a Sam Mallinder ground out. Bulls didn't have a ton of chances. And this was not against their ace, Gilbert, by the way. However, they looked ready to break it open in the top of the 4th. Another double by Trivelpiece. And the Bulls loaded the bases with 2 outs on an infield single by Dania Brooks. But Kathy Garcia-Soto strikes out. And then in the bottom of the 4th, UTSA strikes for the lead, 2-1. And then they made it 5-1 with a 3-run homer in the bottom of the 5th. However, what a stroke in the top of the 6th. Mallinder walks, Trivelpiece gets hit, and then with 2 outs, Camille Ortiz-Martinez gets hit, and they bring in their ace, Gilbert. And Ken Erickson brings in Alex Wilkes, the true freshman who's had some moments this year, but had not had a bunch of them in conference play. She had back-to-back 2-hit games. She was hitting .366, but saw her batting average dip to .277, and frankly had not had a start in a month. Last one was March 30th. So here she comes off the bench to face the other side's ace, who comes in to presumably get out of the inning, and Wilkes bombs a grand slam. What a moment, but that was the last moment of the day for the Bulls. UTSA again wins it with a walk-off homer in the bottom of the 8th. So frankly, despite some highlights, the victory on Friday and that slam by Wilkes, overall not a good weekend going for the Bulls. Peyton Dixon gave up 5 runs in that loss Saturday, including walking 5. So with their seeding set as the 8 and UTSA always set as the 9, Sunday was quote-unquote meaningless, but maybe not. Because, first of all, Ken Erickson was able to give some others a chance to play, and boy, did they come through. Wilkes, with that slam, earned a spot in the starting lineup. He also gave Camille Ortiz Martinez her first start in about a month's time, and Alyssa Reyno her first start. Well, Reyno got her first homer as a Bull, a 3-run shot that made it 4-0 in the first after, of course, a Wilkes RBI double. Ortiz Martinez herself would have 2 doubles and a home run in a 14-4 victory. Most runs the Bulls scored this year, most hits 15, and in 5 innings work, by the way, because they put it away with a 7 spot in the top of the 5th. Wilkes drove in 3. Jordan Cadlip and Dania Brooks both had 2 RBI hits in the 7th as the Bulls were putting up that 7 spot to end things. So the Bulls, let's hope, carry that offense on into Wichita. Peyton Dixon did not have to pitch Sunday, so she'll be as rested as possible. The action begins in Wichita on Wednesday. FAU earned the top seed. Charlotte absolutely made FAU earn it. Charlotte swept North Texas. The 49ers, by the way, Charlotte, definite NCAA tournament team. And you'd have to say the same for FAU thanks to its sweep of Tulsa. A sweep that, frankly, shouldn't have happened. They definitely earned the last 2 games. They were decisive 8-2 and 6-2 victories. But while all that crazy stuff was happening with the Bulls in San Antonio on Friday night, well, regular season championship was on the line for FAU, and they were at home losing 7-1 going into the bottom of the 6th inning. They got a 2-run homer, but they were still down going into the 7th, and I'm not going to put this on social media, but if you want to look at it yourself, the leadoff double for FAU, and again, it's 7-3. They still had a lot to do. It came one pitch after an absolutely no-doubt strike 3 that was called a ball, basically where the catcher was set up, it kind of threw the umpire for a visual loop. So FAU had to do some stuff, dramatic stuff, to win on Friday night and ended up with a bases loaded walk, winning it. And you talk about propelling them to the series victory. Again, they rolled on Saturday and Sunday. So FAU's the number 1 seed, conference champs. Charlotte, a very, very good number 2 seed. North Texas is the 3 seed. Wichita, we said they'd probably sweep Memphis. They did. And with Tulsa getting swept, Wichita is the 4 and Tulsa the 5. The UAB East Carolina series victor was going to be the 6th seed, and that turned actually out to be UAB after dropping the first one in Greenville. Those teams turn around and play each other. They are on the other half of the bracket from the Bulls. The Bulls are on the FAU side, but to get to FAU, they've got to beat the 5 seed and then presumably the 4th seed. Tulsa is that 5 seed. The Bulls will play them Wednesday in Wichita at 4 o'clock. If they win, they're likely going up against Wichita. Shockers play UTSA in the last game on Wednesday. If the Bulls can beat Tulsa and the Wichita UTSA winner, they will be in the semifinals against the number 1 seed, FAU. These are all teams that the Bulls have defeated at least once this season because they never got swept all year. And again, we'll give you more of the Bulls outlook specifically on Wednesday's show because that is the day everything gets going there. And we'll also recap the baseball game against the Florida Gators. Game day decision, by the way, on if I'm going to be making the drive to Gainesville to call that action. We probably will do that for sure. But also Tuesday, we know we'll be talking to Steve Bradley and members of the men's golf team. And also Tuesday, tune in for a new episode of Bull Speed Ahead as Michael Kelly will have some special guests. And you can hear that on Tuesday. But that's going to wrap up the Monday Bulls Beat. What a crazy weekend to summarize. And oh yeah, best of luck to women's golf. First round today underway in North Carolina, round 2 tomorrow, and they'll wrap it up on Wednesday and hope to be going to the NCAA Finals. Thanks for listening. I'm Derek Sharp.